This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you from King's Comics every week with your hosts, me, Andrew Levins, and her, Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
Hey, Siobhan, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to everyone listening right now, and also whatever holiday you celebrate. I hope it was great. I'm exhausted, and I ate a particularly hot lunch today, so a lot of chili.
It's like 40 degrees Celsius in Australia, so... In Sydney right now.
Yeah, I like it hot. And so, yeah, the hot takes are going to be that much hotter.
It's going to be a very spicy episode.
That's right. So, you've been warned. did you do anything of note over the break? We didn't really have a break.
Yeah, not really. I sort of slept a lot and watched a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race. So, I took a real break from comics.
I also got in a car like RuPaul does every week.
What?
I drove 3 hours with my kids to visit my racist grandparents.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's beautiful.
Christmas.
Real good fun. Anyway, guess what? Guess who did not have a goddamn break this year?
Comics.
Comics just didn't even give us a moment to breathe. This week and then this upcoming week, just enormous.
Yeah.
Enormous weeks for comics.
So many
friggin' serious issues. And I swear I remember like the final 2 weeks of the year always being like nice and calm and quiet. In fact, we're at King's right now. Jim is shaking his head at me. Jim, you've worked at King's Comics for 100 years now. Did it used to be quieter these last at the end of the year?
Yeah, it definitely was. And you know, back in the days when there was only 44 X-Men titles and. And Brian Bendis was actually writing good stuff. It was. We used to have our off weeks. They would let us rest for Christmas, but no, not this year.
I remember that. I remember like the last 3 weeks would sometimes just all ship together, and you would have all the last weeks of the year.
Yeah, they'd ship everything together with like you know everything sorted out for us and everything. And then this year is like, screw it.
Yeah,
we don't care anymore.
Okay.
Some sweet comic book burns from Old Man Jim.
Thank you for the curmudgeon cameo. Anyway, what we do every week on this show is we review almost all of the comics. There's some big gaps. It's a heck of a week.
I forgot to read a whole bunch in a shocking turn of events.
I chose not to read a whole bunch. I chose instead to visit racist grandparents. Which is a new number one, Racist Grandparents, written by me, coming next month. Racist Grandparents Rebirth.
Can we have Homophobic Auntie in there as well? As
oh, yeah, she's
special
great.
Guest appearance
Fan
for me.
Fan favorite. So, yeah, what we do each week is we review all of the brand new comics, and we kick off with a little segment called First Things First, in which we review all of the new number ones.
There's a lot of number ones this week.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get through the ones that I read. I think we covered them all between us. There's a zero issue or two in there as well. Siobhan, was your favorite number one this week? Quite a few here going through.
You know what? I think genuinely, my favorite thing, one of my favorite comics of the week was a Titan comic by Cy Spurrier, art by Connor Boyle, called Hookjaw.
I didn't
read
this.
Did you read this?
No.
Oh my god!
So I should bring this home.
Yeah, you totally should. It's about a
guy
shark.
It's not about a guy with a hook for a jaw?
No, it's about a shark with a harpoon through his jaw called Hook Jaw.
That's awesome. So is it a horror comic?
Sort of, yeah, because it's about this one big evil shark called Hook Jaw who is making the sharks work together because normally they're like lone sharks.
Every shark for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But these sharks have started working together and there's like a really swearzy old lady.
Swearzy?
Yeah. Old lady marine biologist fronting this mission to find out why the sharks are working together. And it's so good.
Man, the art's awesome too.
Yeah, the art's awesome. And you get to hear, by the end of the issue, you start seeing what the shark's thinking.
Yes. Amazing. It's really shark good. Dialogue.
And then there's heaps of shark facts in the back.
Wow, like actual genuine shark facts.
Yeah, actual genuine shark facts. It's going to teach you a lot about great whites. So you can read this and then come visit Australia and get eaten by one. Yay.
Have you ever been a fan of Shark Week?
I mean, I think sharks are cool.
Isn't it like, we don't have the was it Discovery Channel?
Yeah, something like that, no.
They just show nothing but sharks on Discovery Channel for an entire week.
I mean, it's a compelling concept, and I think that they should start doing that in comics.
Should we do a comic Shark Week?
Comic Shark Week.
Who could we could have? King Shark?
Yes. Hook Jaw.
What was the shark? Street Sharks?
Street Sharks?
Street Sharks.
Which one? Grizzly Shark?
Grizzly shark? Oh, good. Okay. Absolutely. All right, Shark Week.
Done.
But when is Shark Week? Actually, I think this is a really good idea. We'll do a Shark Week special.
I feel like there must have been Jaws
Shark
comics
Week,
at some point as well.
2017 is July. When is Shark Week 2017? You'll be able to get your shark on in the meantime. What? Traditionally, Shark Week is held in the summer months, but Discovery Channel has not confirmed an actual date for next year's adventure. All right, so the middle of 2017.
Shark Week.
Shark Week special of Serious Issues.
Stay tuned, guys.
By Lockjaw.
Hookjaw. It's really, really good from Titan Comics. I highly recommend this, guys.
So last week was Christmas. Last weekend was Christmas, and that's why we're a little late recording this. I hope you enjoyed the bonus episodes that we put up in the interim. We had our live episode, which some people did not love because we were apparently quite offensive towards our listeners.
You say we.
the complaint roped you in right alongside.
Oh, yeah,
me.
That's true. Yeah. So what can we say? We're the bad boys of comic book podcasting.
We're the Triple M roast team of comic book podcasting. But, I mean, to give context, we did a live kind of comic book buying night and then decided to put our... in a nightclub and then decided to put our live episode in the middle of that. And mostly it was our friends that were drinking and talking over us. And... when I was being abusive to the audience, they actually weren't listening, so no one knew that I was being abusive to them, except for the people that were trying to listen. So they were getting a kick out of it, and I'm sorry if it comes across like we were just straight up insulting people for coming to one of our nights. It's not how it went down at all, even if it sounds like that.
It's incredibly context specific.
Next time I'll give a context kind of warning at the beginning. I'll set the mood a bit better. There's a bonus episode in the feed right now with Steel Saunders from... Steel Wars, a Star Wars podcast that we recorded last weekend, all about the Star Wars comics. Steel and I both read the Star Wars comics for very different reasons. He reads them because he loves all things Star Wars and has to make sure he's up to date with everything that's now canon because the Marvel books are all canon, and I read comic books because we have to. Forced to gunpoint every week by Jim.
And also comic books are amazing. Who gets Jim guns?
But, you know, like it's kind of like, I'm like, he'll be like, why the hell did this happen? And I'm like, because it's comic books. And he's like, that's not an acceptable answer to my canon brain. Anyway, it's a fun listen. Go back and listen to those. But anyway, the reason I brought out Christmas is because there were two Christmas specials last week. Both from comic books that we read regularly and love. Mm-hmm. There was Klaus by Grant Morrison and Dan Mora with the Witch of Winter special. Mm-hmm. And Power Man and Iron Fist Sweet Christmas special.
I mean, if they've never done that before.
Yeah,
that's a missed opportunity.
So this is an annual. They both feature Krampus.
Yep.
Well, I mean, Krampus featured in the main series of Claus, and I feel like this take on Krampus and the take on Santa Claus that pops up in the Power Man and Iron Fist annual is heavily inspired by the Claus series because he's like quite a cool sleeveless. Wait, that's Damon Hellstrom. The Power Man and Iron Fist special. I read a lot of Christmas specials in the last month. They all merged into one.
Yeah, and I don't think I did read this.
Oh, you didn't read this one?
I'm so shit.
You're the worst. This is really, really fun.
I started. It was really hard trying to read comics with my 14-year-old sister talking over me constantly and dabbing in my face.
Shouts to her.
I read the first half of it.
You can read about her in Racist Grandparents Number 1, yeah. Rebirth, coming to you in March. Power Man and Iron Fist Sweet Christmas Annual is the Power Man and Iron Fist take on Jingle All the Way.
Mm.
Luke Cage,
second take on Jingle All the Way that we've had this year.
Luke Cage is trying to get some toy and bumps into Jessica Drew, who's also like just trying to escape her house and how hard being a mum is by just kind of going out shopping late at night. And turns out Krampus is behind this like take on Pokemon Go that all the kids are addicted to, and he wants to eat children. And so it's up to Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and a bunch of other people to kind of save the day. Damon Hellstrom has been undercover as a Santa in the toy store, which is really fun. And Jolly Saint Nick, who like straight up that looks like is out of the Claws series there, right?
Yeah, it does. He's got a cool cape, but he's not as sexy as
He's significantly older.
Yeah.
So he shows up to save the day. I don't know, this is really, really silly, like monster splattery Christmas special, but it worked really well. It was fun to seeing David Walker, who writes the series, just let loose and tell a really, really fun and silly Christmas story.
Yeah, nice.
The Claws and the Witch of Winter. Did you read this, Siobhan?
Yes, I did.
Did you actually read this?
So many things that I'm like, I'm pretty sure I read that, and then I opened it, I'm like, oh, no, I definitely didn't. but this I did read. Definitely did read. So this is like, as opposed to the Claws series, which was set hundreds of years in the past, this is set pretty much present day, right?
Yeah.
And it's all about a father whose kids have gone missing. Oh.
Wow. A fire alarm just went off.
That's convenient.
We're going to pause. False alarm, everybody. We didn't die. We're fine.
Not true. We're actually dead. This is us talking to you from the afterlife.
Ghost podcast. Klaus and the Witch of Winter.
Yep.
It's a fun little romp about a woman who wants to make everything winter.
And Geppetto. Geppetto shows up, everyone.
I think it's way more far out than the original Claw series got.
Absolutely.
But it's a nice little addition to the Claw story. And it'd be cool if they did this every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And like had it be in a different time period, because they referenced a lot of like other adventures that he's been on in the times in between. And it sounded that stuff I would like to explore.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like this could become a big franchise that Boom has, the Claw series.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope, like, I mean, I feel like as long as the creators stay on it, it could be good forever. There's infinite stories they could tell.
Definitely. Over in the non-Christmas world, Marvel put out a whole bunch of books, but also DC had a really big book this week.
Absolutely.
Justice League versus Suicide Squad, number 1 of 6.
A new weekly series.
Oh, everyone. Is it weekly?
Weekly.
I haven't picked up the new one for this week.
Yeah,
get that.
It's on the shelf.
Because I kind of liked this.
Yeah. Look, Jason Fabok is such a solid superheroes guy.
That's who is the artist on this book, and it's written by Joshua Williamson, who's been writing the Suicide Squad series since Rebirth started.
Which you really enjoy.
Yeah, which I Stockholm Syndrome myself into enjoying. but this sees Suicide Squad on a mission, and the Justice League are aware of the Suicide Squad, all these enemies, fighting together for a secret government agency, and they show up to basically shut them down. And Amanda Waller, who is in charge of the Suicide Squad, gives the order to show no mercy. If you get captured by the Justice League, I'm going to kill you, basically, is what she says. And it turns out there's a big shadowy organization of bad guys behind their meetup. And that shadowy organization is led by Maxwell Lord, who is a much more capable mercenary-looking Maxwell Lord than I remember.
Yeah, Maxwell Lord originally was much more like a businessman.
Yeah, goofy 80s business guy. Like pretty much that character from the Futurama that shows up from the 80s. Do you remember that one? The 80s business guy character? Great episode, everyone. Futurama, it's a fantastic series. But Maxwell Lord was kind of like this goofy guy who was like managing the Justice League in Justice League International, which is a really fun run. But then they made him go all dark and murderous.
Yeah, when it turned out he had psychic abilities, and then Wonder Woman snapped his neck in one of my favorite moments in superhero comics.
he is at a very high level of psychic ability in this issue.
But he still gets nosebleeds. I love that.
This is a good start to like a fun little event. An event should be weekly.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, it's never going to be a truly satisfying comic book story. You may as well just get them all out quickly.
Get it done.
So there's no massive build-up. Like, look what Civil War 2 has done.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'll be... Like, I probably didn't love this issue. I thought it was, like, fine, but pretty average. But, like, for me, this Suicide Squad is not why I like the Suicide Squad, and this version of the Justice League have, like, no personality whatsoever.
That's very true.
And, like, are the most generic average Justice League lineup of all time. But when Maxwell Lord's team of Emerald Empress, Dr. Polaris, Lobo, and classic Lobo, not sexy Lobo, Johnny Sorrow, and Rustam, I don't know who Rustam is.
Who's Rustam? Jim, you know who Rustam is?
He looks like Assassin's Creed with the, like, pointy shoes. When they show up,
if Assassin's Creed in a video game was one person, that's who Rustam would be.
I don't really know what that game is. I'm not much of a gamer, but yeah, that makes me interested because that's such a funny team up.
Totally.
I'm
on board.
Yeah, I'm reluctantly on board.
Welcome to the world of suddenly loving Suicide Squad. Over to Marvel, and we got a bunch of new number ones and a number zero this week.
Should we start with zero?
Yeah, we'll start with zero. I hated this.
Yeah.
The Mighty Captain Marvel, number zero, written by a new creative team, Margaret Stoll with Emilio Lasso and Ramon Rosanes on art.
I mean, this continues to be confusing because in this book, everyone's like, oh, it turns out Captain Marvel was right in the end of Civil War and everyone forgives her or something, but she also has to leave the Earth. Am I misinterpreting that?
I don't know.
But, like, we still haven't seen the end of Civil War. So it's yet again just like, well, I guess that's what happens and the end of Civil War is ruined forever and no one cares anyway. But this is a lot of dream stuff as well.
This is an entirely pointless issue and I hope that they were just kind of told to shoehorn this in.
Yeah, I mean, it is a zero issue, so I feel like zero issues generally are pretty pointless. But why have a zero issue then, guys?
Yeah, this is a really, really pointless start to a series, which I hope is going to be good. I really, really liked the way the last Captain Marvel series started before they just took it over with Civil War 2.
Mm.
So it kind of, this feels like quite a big departure from that, which is a bit of a bummer.
It also brings out the bits that I really, and like maybe this is just, like this is clearly a personal thing because a lot of people really like Captain Marvel and they love this particular element and like the whole Carol Corps people are super passionate. But I don't like the sort of fangirly vibe of the Captain Marvel comics. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like it's just a bit, she's an adult woman who, like, is a commander, well, like, a fucking captain in the Air Force?
Sure.
Anyway, you know, like, it's just, she's a bit like, we're all cats and
yeah.
Shit like that, and I don't really connect with it or get it.
Well, there is this, you see it a lot in comics where female characters are made to act more like female comic book readers.
Yeah.
Is a way of kind of being a bit more relatable.
Yeah, and I sort of don't identify with that, like, fan persona kind of thing. So maybe that's why I particularly reject it.
Yeah, well, but I think, you know, you can reference it like Chelsea Kane did in her Mockingbird
yes.
run really well and have the character kind of, you know, well-meaningly poke fun at it.
Yeah, but I feel like that character had a lot more personality than this version of, like, I feel like I've read a lot of Captain Marvel comics and I still don't really have any idea who Carol is other than, like, a bit serious and likes cats.
I totally agree. And the reason I liked that last series so much is that it had so many supporting characters.
Yeah.
You had all of Alpha Flight, you had, you know, Rocket Raccoon showing up, you had Abigail Brand, who I think is one of my favorite Marvel characters.
I would much rather have an Abigail Brand comic right now, please.
Just
but
give
I think
Carol green hair.
This is why I'm kind of glad that Marvel, Carol's going to be included in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because I think that they've done a really solid job of taking characters who maybe aren't that interesting and giving them a bit of personality. Cough. Drax. You know what I mean? Like, I think it might help to define her a little bit more clearly.
They should just give her green hair.
Just give her green hair. It's all you need.
You don't need a personality.
Guys, you don't need a personality.
Hey, speaking of green hair, Gamora, number one, written by Nicole Perlman, who was one of the writers on the original
Good job Guardians. To Marvel, though, of getting actual female writers working on
She wrote
characters.
The original Guardian of the Galaxy script. Artist on this one is by Marco Cicchetto. I was excited about this because I really enjoy the version of Gamora that we see in the Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning cosmic stuff run, especially their Guardians run. I think that version of Gamora is who I think of. You know, she's the most deadly woman in the universe. Mm. I really didn't like you know, this is an example of the Marvel Universe getting it wrong. I hate the version of Gamora that we see in the Guardians movie. She's not badass. She, you know, pines for Star-Lord. And she lets her guard down all the time, and she should be like the most capable of that on that team, and in a way she is, but I don't know. I wanted more from her. I was excited about this because, you know, she's never really gotten a chance to shine on her own, and I thought it'd be fun to follow her adventures in present day Marvel. But this is actually a origin story of sorts.
Good.
Which I just don't want. She is Thanos's daughter, adopted daughter or whatever in this one, alongside Nebula. So they're sisters and they have kind of a rivalry. And she is like basically an assassin for Thanos. And she basically takes out entire races, like entire bloodlines from certain races. And so in this one, she's hunting down the Badoon royalty. But I just like, there's a few things about this that I enjoyed. Like I think, Perlman has a much better grasp on how Thanos should act and talk than Jeff Lemire does in the Thanos run that we're going to review later on in this episode. But I think overall, like, I don't really care about her origin. Yeah. I want to know what she's up to now on her own, away from Guardian stuff, you know, going on her own missions. That's way more appealing to me.
Yeah, totally. I didn't read this because I have no interest in her as a character. Because she just seems like Space Katana, but without a cool sword.
She's way better than
She's
Katana.
She's just like, no one is better than Katana.
Everyone is better than
Katana. Nah, come on. Katana's great. I don't know. Just I'm an angry woman. I am critical of
women.
Female characters.
Well, luckily we got a chance to talk about a male character that you can be critical of.
Absolutely.
Another member of the Guardians, the Galaxy got his own spin-off series, Star-Lord, written by Serious Issues favorite, Chip Zdarsky, and art by Chris Anker.
I love Chris Anker. Chris Anker's art is my favorite thing about this whole issue.
So, Zdarsky, we know from Sex Criminals as the artist. We know from doing a great run on Jughead as writer. I really enjoyed his Howard the Duck run that he wrote as well.
Agreed.
And one of the few writers that's put himself into a comic and done so in a really great way.
Yep.
All those comics are quite wacky and off the wall and meta in parts. So I was a bit surprised to see this Star-Lord comic to be very stripped back and almost kind of dull in comparison to his other sillier outputs.
I mean, like, I think we all expected this to be much more of a comedy book because of the way that Star-Lord has been portrayed in the Marvel movies. And also because Jim Zdarsky is primarily a comedy writer. Mm. And this was a fairly, I think I have really high expectations of Chip as well, because I love what he does when he does it well so much, and this felt really, really average to me. I really like the fact that they're actively making him like a sexy character. Like, he's got his shirt off for a significant period of the comic, and Chris Anker obviously spent a lot of time getting that body right. And Abigail Brand shows up as well. Yeah. But this is just kind of like, I don't know. Not much really happens in this issue. Like, it's sort of Peter's stuck on Earth and Abigail Brand gives him a phone with the numbers of the only two people that he knows on Earth, who are his ex-girlfriend Kitty Pryde and Howard the Duck. And Howard doesn't want to hang out with him because Howard's problems are worse. And Kitty doesn't really want to see him because of relationships.
Yeah. So it then turns into an Old Man Logan Star-Lord team-up book, which is not what I was expecting. But I actually really enjoyed Zdarsky's portrayal of Old Man Logan.
Yeah, that was fun.
A character who I don't really understand.
Or care about.
Yeah.
That's me.
But I enjoyed him as like this like kind of like smart-aleck old man.
Yeah, that's nice. And I like, if it kind of mimics some kind of like Wolverine, Kitty Pryde / Jubilee / Armor sort of relationship, I'm on board with that. And I'm totally willing to give this another shot, especially because Chris Anker, I think, knocks it out of the park.
Yeah,
the
art's fantastic in this. And you know, like, for all of us kind of complaining about it, there are a few great moments of Zdarsky being silly that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's great at having characters argue.
And he's great at having characters have feelings.
Definitely. One thing I want to point out, we are a podcast, and at one point, Star-Lord is wearing a tank top featuring another podcast, P.S. I Love You XOXO, which is a super bro-y PlayStation podcast.
Oh, I assumed it was a Gossip Girl reference. It shows how much I know about nothing.
Which, you know, and I listen to this podcast sometimes, but maybe the creative team are just fans of it, but in no universe does Star-Lord listen to P.S. I Love You XOXO.
Yeah, isn't he... I don't see him as much of a gamer. Maybe he is.
I mean, why? You have him on the on his couch in front of a television. What? Where's the controller,
guys?
Where's the PS controller? Why are you gonna have him in a PS podcast shirt? He's not even gaming, bruh. Anyway, that's the biggest.
He's a fake gamer.
Yeah, he's
girl.
Tom. I hate fake gamer girls. So here's the Marvel books. I'm gonna stick with Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll give Captain Marvel number one a shot.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
But we've gotten to the point now where I'm actively looking for books that I can just drop.
Yeah, there's lots of comics.
We are reading a lot of comics. And I know it's a dumb thing to complain about, but we don't have to read all of them.
Yeah.
And,
that's why we're choosing to drop some.
I feel like Marvel and DC put out, you know, we read a bulk of their input. So yeah. If I'm going to drop anything, it'll be something that they put out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or I might drop Gem and the Misfits number two, because I just read number one, written by Kelly Thompson.
Wait, did we finish number ones?
Yeah, this is number one.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said
Gem and the Misfits.
Oh,
this is number one.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I kind of like this. I don't know anything about the Gem.
Me neither. That's why I didn't pick it
stuff.
Up.
But this is about the Misfits, who are like, I guess, like some rival band in the Gem universe who are like. I feel like you would hate this because it's a lot of like broadly written, like we're such different women. These are our main archetypes. Like here are our quirks.
Yes. Kind of thing. Sometimes that really appeals to me, but most of the time it does not.
I found it kind of like entertaining enough. It's about a kind of shit band that decide, like with their popularity waning, they decide to do a reality TV show. So this is the setup for that. I'm going to give it one more issue to see what the reality TV antics are like.
Mm.
And if those antics are spectacular enough, I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, sounds like not my sort of thing. I think maybe I'm just like, I think I spent too much time with Jim and I'm turning into a curmudgeon and I hate young people. I hate young people and I hate their antics.
We should tell everyone what Jim actually does at King's, because he just is a sometime cameo.
Fucking nothing, mate.
Fucking nothing, mate. All right.
He writes the newsletter. If you like our sassy newsletter, award-winning, diamond award-winning newsletter.
Official chief orderer, right?
Yeah. Jim orders all the stuff. So if there's something that we didn't order enough of, you know who to blame.
Talia.
She gives terrible advice.
Lots of insight to the King's staff on this episode. Good stuff. That's what the fans want, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I don't even talk about the number ones that I actually really like this week. There's a few good ones. The Lock and Key. Small World One Shot. Did you read this?
No, because I've not read any Lock and Key. So it seems like I would probably be a little bit lost.
You and anyone listening could pick this up without any real knowledge of Lock and Key and enjoy it.
That's good.
It's written by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son, mm-hmm. and drawn by Gabriel Rodriguez. They did the series Lock and Key together. Lock and Key is a fantastic horror, kind of fun horror adventure series about a family in a old house that where they find all these different keys that can do fantastic things, like you can unlock your mind and take things or put things into your own head.
Cool.
Or you can shrink yourself, or you can enter, you can swap bodies with different animals and people, and you can transform your looks, you can control shadows, all this crazy stuff. It's an unbelievably riveting adventure series. So very surprising, because it wrapped up very, very neatly a couple years ago. So I was very surprised to get a one-shot from it. And this is basically that it's set in the late 1800s, just before the 20th century. And we see some ancestors of the main family in Lock and Key playing with a dollhouse. They have a key that when you put it in the dollhouse, it is a replica of the house that they're in at the time, and you can see everybody in the rooms in the dollhouse, and the kids who are given the keys to the dollhouse start messing with their brothers and other people in the house, and the youngest person accidentally lets a spider into the dollhouse, who then appears in their real house as a big ginormous spider.
Spooky.
And starts like kind of tracking all the family down.
Wow.
It's a significantly less dark issue of Lock and Key with a happy ending.
Hmm.
But it was really, really fun to revisit this world. And I forgot how fun even just describing to you all the abilities that the keys had, even describing to you like that was exciting. I'm like, oh man, I really want to revisit this series again.
Yeah,
I highly recommend everyone do so.
Yeah, that's one of those series that people are like, why haven't you read that, Siobhan?
All it would take, don't have time, pick up the first trade and you'd be hooked. I actually binged the first 4 trades in, I think, a night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was when I was still, first got Comixology, I had it on my phone before I had an iPad. So I read like 30 issues of comics on my phone.
That sounds like the worst way to read comics of all time.
Hey, it works. So yeah, Lock and Key, number one, A Small World. Highly recommended, obviously, for fans of Lock and Key, but also if you wanted to give a peek into what this series is all about and also get a peek of Gabriel Rodriguez's incredible art. He's one of my favorite artists and he doesn't do that much. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Also, that came out this week, Dark Horse put out Dead Inside, a new series by John Arcudi, who we've enjoyed on various Hellboy universe stuff. He also is the writer of Rumble on Image, and he's done some really great true crime stories and crime comics in the past. So this is his new series, Dead Inside, with art by Tony Faizula.
Nailed it.
I reckon that's actually did.
Yeah, I actually think you did a good job then. Better than I was going to do.
And colors by Andre May. This is a hard crime book about a detective who...
Prison investigator.
Yeah, she's kind of been delegated or kind of pushed into this role where she's a bit uppity. And so the department have put her into a role where she can't really have much say and her things get her ideas and kind of... The way she wants to take the cases get overruled a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So she's very frustrated. And this she finds there have been 2 deaths inside a prison and she's investigating it. It looks like a murder-suicide, but she thinks that there's
something antics afoot. I really enjoyed this.
Me
and
too.
Like, we get a lot of crime comics and it can be easy to go like, oh man, they're all the same. What new stories can you tell? But like, the final reveal of this made me genuinely put down the comic and go, what?
Yeah.
That's crazy. And the art is so good and so different, like so unusual. Yeah, really, really enjoyed this. And she's such a like fully fleshed out seeming character, like the sort of hard drinking, smoking female detective is like a fairly well-known trope by this point. But like they've... really, really, like, he really simply sort of fleshed her out in a really nice way, like her relationship with her ex-husband and like just really, I thought it was really cleverly done.
Yeah, and it kind of plays her vices as actually something that can, like, doesn't really help her in her life at all. You know, sometimes it gets glorified in comics. Like, she's a grizzled old detective who drinks and smokes a lot. And this one, like, you know, she fucks up the case almost because she's drunk and she can't chase down a lead. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. And if you want to read one of my favorite crime comics from the last few years that John Arcudi wrote is called The Creep. Have I ever lent that to you?
Yeah, and I still haven't read it. So
oh, man, you're crazy. It's such a good book. It's about a detective with a private investigator and he's got a real fucked up face. And,
cool.
There's some murders. It's real good fun.
That does sound cool.
Yeah, so I highly recommend Dead Inside. Probably my favorite number one this week, maybe.
Yeah, up there with Hookjaw for sure.
The art is very, very unique too. Really painted quality.
Really textured.
Yeah. All good stuff.
Very, very good. Some really grisly murders. Very good, guys.
Do you want to talk about Gumballs?
Yeah. So I read Gumballs, which is it's nice to see something like this actually printed in single issue. This is from Top Shelf by Aaron Nations. And it's sort of like short form autobiography comics and with a couple of sort of bits and pieces about other people. But it's very much about Aaron, who is a... young trans person who is in the process of transitioning, and it's got some really personal stuff, also some like less personal stuff, stories about other people who have, I don't know whether they've written to him or how that's worked, but yeah, it's like if you like autobiography comics, I think this is a really good example of the form, and I really enjoyed it.
And some great displays of really great cartooning,
absolutely,
great line work, really, really sweet models of the characters.
Yeah, very simple. Sort of reminds me a little bit of, in terms of art, like Bad Machinery, John Allison kind of stuff, but like blockier, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, very enjoyable.
And nice colors too.
Yeah, absolutely nice colors. And a really nice, like, a nice single issue from Top Shelf. Top Shelf do really beautifully printed stuff.
Is it a one and done?
I don't think so. It says issue one, so I'm hoping it's going to be ongoing.
It's almost like a little anthology.
Yeah.
Also than a story. Yeah. Yeah. Final number one that we're going to talk about this week is Divinity number three, number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third miniseries of Divinity, written by Matt Kintz and with art by Trevor Hairston for Valiant. The first two Divinity stories are all about basically a spaceship full of cosmonauts gets lost in space, and when they return to Earth, they have superpowers.
Crazy powers.
Very, very like Superman level superpowers.
Yeah.
And basically, it's kind of like Russia uses them to lead the world.
Yeah, to take over. Well, because the Divinity powers are more like reality bending, so it's kind of like they have no limits, almost kind of Scarlet Witchy, maybe.
Right.
And so in this, they. Like, it's set currently, but history has been remade from like the 20s in favor of the Soviet Union. So we see Bloodshot, the Valiant character, who is now Commander Bloodshot and has a hammer and sickle on his chest. I would be so interested to talk to a Russian person about this, about this series and see what they think of it. But I really enjoyed this. I think it's kind of almost like a cool spy comic
yeah.
for most of the way through it, which is very, very different to the Divinity books that we've seen previously. Only see one of the other Divinities.
Yeah, and nothing makes a alternate timeline story more appealing than having just one character know that this is not the right timeline.
Yeah, that's always the best.
And so we follow him for most of this comic book, trying to get back to the right timeline. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of Stalinverse books coming out through Valiant over the next couple months. In fact, one comes out this week.
Commander Bloodshot,
written by Jeff Lemire, who's doing Bloodshot at the moment. So it's going to be a fun series. I didn't love this first issue as much as I liked the first two series of Divinity, but then once you kind of realize where they're going with this,
yeah.
stick to the end of this issue, guys. It gets
it's
real
worth
good.
It. Yeah. It's like it's a slower start than we've seen in the other Divinity books, and it's less kind of cosmic and mind bendy and more kind of
world building almost.
Yeah, but it's clever, and I'm keen to see where it goes.
Yeah,
and the art's great, and the covers are great.
It's great, guys.
It's real great.
And we'll be reviewing another Matt Kent book, which is also great, later in the episode. But first, we have to play our award winning, it won best comic book podcast regular segment. Flip a coin for Marvel or DC. And I swear I had a coin with me, but then the fire alarm went off. Oh, here's one. Here we go. So in this amazing segment, I flip a coin, and depending on whether it lands heads or tails, we review DC or Marvel next. Siobhan, please, for the last coin flip of 2016, heads. Which is heads, Marvel or DC?
Marvel is heads.
Okay. And it is tails. We're going to review DC first.
Right.
I read all of 2 DC books this week.
I read tons. I read double that.
You read tons. 4.
I read 4 comics.
Batman and Superman were the 2 books that I read. Both of them were issues 13. Let's talk about Batman first, because I feel like this is going to be one that a lot of people are discussing.
This is the more controversial. So a lot of people have like Tom King's sort of revelation that Batman's mission is an ongoing suicide attempt has ruffled a few people's feathers the wrong way. I think it's like, it is a fine, if slightly more boring take on the character than I was expecting from Tom King. I thought that he was going to do something a bit more clever, maybe use his kind of CIA background in some kind of really interesting way. But I did like this wrap-up issue. I thought that it was a good way to tie up all of the bits. I love a good double cross, bait and switch, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, in the end, this whole arc, I Am Suicide, in which they infiltrate Bane's base.
Naked Bane. I feel like he's a separate character. Bane,
and trick him into thinking that he's one, but then they double cross him and then they end up leaving with everything they came for, aka pirate, Psycho Pirate.
With his back broken. Catwoman breaks Bane's back.
I wasn't loving the 2 issues within this arc, which are letters to and from Batman and Catwoman. That kind of are like the whole issue is like a letter narration. I thought that they really halted the pace of this arc. I would have preferred them as bookends. I think would have, and they could have provided a bit more perspective on the double cross, maybe. I thought this issue really wrapped things up. And for all the darkness that comes with saying that Batman existing as Batman is just an ongoing suicide attempt. This is actually quite a lighthearted, fun, and at times goofy, but like welcome goofy, cartoon goofery.
And I liked the sort of reveal that the only person who can take down Psycho Pirate is Wesker. I can't remember his first name, who is the
ventriloquist,
the body of the ventriloquist, because the only person who can make him feel anything is the ventriloquist. All right, guys.
It's Scarface. Like, Scarface, ventriloquist only takes orders from ventriloquist. So when Psycho Pirate tries to alter his emotions, he can't because Scarface
is in control, guys.
Yep. I thought that was really great.
Yeah, I thought that was heaps clever. Heaps clever. And I'm keen if this is now going to lead into a Bane arc, which is what it looks like it's going to be.
Yeah.
But I think part of my issue is I really loved what Gail Simone did with Bane over Secret Six. I thought that was such a compelling character that it's kind of always a little bit disappointing for me to have him be just like a Venom guy.
Yeah, but I mean, they spent a lot of, before New 52 happened, a lot of kind of reforming of their main Batman villains.
Yeah.
So, like, Bane was kind of a good guy. Riddler was straight up a good guy.
Yeah.
Catwoman was a good guy. So I see why you would then kind of try and bring it back having them more criminal.
And this is a very scary version of Bane, which is cool.
Definitely. He's still, but, you know, at his core, he wants to break the bat.
Yeah.
But instead, the bat breaks him. I really enjoyed Punch and Julie, who I thought had died. That whole thing being a double cross, and Catwoman wasn't actually a vicious double crossing killer. I love that they made a chewing gum bubble around themselves, and then it blew up into an inflatable raft. I thought that was something straight out of the animated series of Batman. There was some cool silliness. Yeah, super fun. So, I think overall, I get people are kind of disappointed by the Tom King Batman run, but I feel like he's really playing the long game. And the only issues of this run that I haven't really enjoyed were the Monster Man arc. I think you can just ignore that, and it actually has been a pretty good arc so far.
And it's pretty hard. Like, the double shipping schedule, I think, is probably really hard.
Yeah, agreed.
So you also read Superman?
Yeah, which is the second issue of the Super Monster arc, the finale of the team up between Superman and Frankenstein. In this, we are introduced to Frankenstein's bride.
Hell yeah.
Who is a four-armed assassin working for some weird organization. They're trying to take down an alien who has been masquerading as Lois's new boss. This alien you can blow it apart and then it will reform. like the
cool
Terminator
mechanism.
Yeah. This is like a really, really, like, tonally nothing like the other issues of Superman. And I kind of liked it. This is like way schlockier.
Absolutely. This was heaps fun. I really enjoyed this. And I really liked the DC version of Frankenstein and his bride. And there were some like cute moments there. And it was just a straight up fun adventure.
Yeah. And he's kind of become Tomasi's character.
Yeah.
Since the Frankenstein and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series ended. In the New 52, he kind of only pops up in the stories that Tomasi writes. Hopefully they're building him up. Maybe he'll be a big presence in the Super Sons run or something like that's coming up soon. I'd like that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like Frankenstein a lot.
And it looked like they sort of, a character who lives near Superman's new farm, wherever the hell that's supposed to be,
who previously
saved him. It looks like they could be maybe setting up for there to be some conflict there, which I think could be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's a couple of like little nods to the ongoing story as well as just a really fun two issues and done arc. I love that.
Yeah. And I know that Wonder Woman won our best DC series of 2016, rightfully so, but I also think Superman deserves a spot by its side. This is just a always very good comic.
Absolutely.
So what were the books that I forgot to read that you did?
I read Nightwing.
Yep.
After being a big complainy baby about how just because he's back in Bloodhaven doesn't mean it's going to be great. But actually, this issue was pretty good. So the last issue saw Nightwing getting a job at a like youth outreach center kind of place in Bloodhaven and realizing that the girl who runs it is a minor villain that he put away years ago when she was a teenager. And there's a bit of like cool romantic friction between them there. And it turns out that she runs a support group for reformed supervillains who are just trying to make it work. And Nightwing shows up trying to arrest them all the time.
Well, isn't it specifically like a support group for villains who were taken down by Nightwing.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's all people who are very personal to him. But there's some really, like, I don't know any of these characters. Like, they are very minor, minor villains. So there's, like, Stallion, who is a former football pro, and his whole thing is that, like, he gets really angry because he can't accept the fact that when he's trying to hit men, actually what he is trying to just do is be close to them. So he's like this sort of conflicted gay character, and everyone sort of has something really full on going on. And it's a, like, I like this. I think it was actually really pretty fun, you know?
I'm going to try and read this in all the free time I have between now and New Year's. What was the last DC book
I also read? Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye, issue 3, from DC's Young Animal series, written by Gerard Way with art by John Rivera and Michael Avon Oeming.
They co-wrote it. John Rivera Gerard Way co-wrote this one.
This is such a weird, weird adventure comic, but it's so fun. So Cave and his daughter and what's this guy's name again? Wild Dog? Mad Dog?
Wild Whatever. Dog.
The guy who wears a hockey mask. They are going to find the city that Cave's former wife, who was a princess of some underground city, and his daughter's mother. They're going to find her city, but they arrive too late and it's not good. And we see some creepy, icky villains and some cool underground adventure stuff. And it's really fun. It's really clever.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I really like this. And this really fun, weird little backup strips that are like set in sort of weird characters. Like the first one I think is about the Wonder Twins, but it's this weird Victorian version of the Wonder Twins. And then the next one is about Green Arrow, which is the best origin story for Green Arrow ever.
Really?
It's like he lands on the island, all normal, lands on the island. But the island is like a Starro, kind of. And he calls himself Zine Arrow. That's what his name is supposed to be after the... That's what the alien was called that he landed on. But everyone mishears it and calls him Green Arrow.
Great.
Yeah, really fun.
These are all the little backups are by Tom Scioli.
Yeah, they're very, very cool.
Really fun. It's Tom Scioli. Yeah, cool. I'm going to catch up on that one as well. Shall we review some Marvel books?
Yes, let's do it.
There were a bunch of them.
There were.
Let's do the good and then work our way to the not good.
Okay.
The good. Doctor Strange, number 15 by Jason Aaron, art by Chris Pacello. And unfortunately, some very capable, but when you're doing... there's a backup artist, Jorge Fornes. And I just think, like, you have... he's irreplaceable style that when you put Bocello's art next to anything, even no matter how good it is, it just looks weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when the fill-in pages, and there aren't that many of them, but they just seem very stark. It's the only bad thing I can say about this issue, which places, like, basically Doctor Strange is running a gauntlet of all of his villains, except in this one, he doesn't face one of his own villains. He faces one of Jason Aaron's kind of creations, the Orb, who was a character that he reintroduced in his Ghost Rider run. The Orb is just a man with a massive eye for a head. He played a big role in the original Sin.
And he's just like, event. He's just a skeevy dude. Like, he's a bad dude, but mostly he's just like a big weirdo.
Yeah, and he, Jason Aaron clearly has a lot of fun writing this character. And this issue has the Orb hijack Doctor Strange in a cab. And basically the Orb is kind of the Watcher now because he's stolen the Watcher's eye and he's strapped it to his chest.
He is also like taking action. He's finding all these really depraved people and pushing them to do the terrible things that they secretly want to do. It's pretty like, and somehow that manages to be really funny.
Yeah. And then in the end of the issue has basically all of Doctor Strange's villains who have been pursuing him over the last few issues kind of show up to try and take him down at the end. We see different, like, no one is better at bringing things back from early runs, you know, and just piling them all on at the same time than Jason Aaron. He's so good at referencing older stories that he's done.
Absolutely.
And it looks like we're now going to see Doctor Strange finally facing Dormammu. So well done to Jason Aaron for waiting 16 issues before having Dormammu show up as a proper threat.
Yeah.
I feel like any lesser writer would have him show up in issue one.
And because this is such a depowered Doctor Strange, he's really relying on specific magical artifacts to defeat these people. It's really compelling because he's not overpowered.
Yeah. Yeah, at one point he wraps, is it like Tutankhamun's like mummy like bandage mummy around bandages. His fist so he can punch magic things? Yeah, this is a great series. I when it started, I was like, oh, this is one of my least favorite things that Jason Aaron's doing at the moment, but it's kind of my favorite now, I think.
Yeah,
no thought came out this week.
There's a lot of good stuff.
He's a great writer.
He is. He's really killing it across the board.
Yeah. Cage came out this week too. You can do the honest, Siobhan. This is your favorite book. This is your favorite book, right?
Oh, it's so fun. I love it so much. It's so like weird. It's so weird and not what most people would expect. So it's like very a 70s version of Luke Cage. He's very like sassy,
kind of dumb.
Yeah, he's like a big dumb guy, very big dumb strong guy. Yeah. But it's like this is so dynamic and cartoony, and I understand like this is not to everyone's taste because it's not a traditional superhero comic.
Man, I love the idea of someone watching the Luke Cage.
Oh my god, yes!
Netflix, like the fucking mopey, drawn out Luke Cage Netflix series, and going, oh, I really like that. I might go check out this Luke Cage comic book, and then just getting this like insane hypercolor wackiness.
Yeah, and this has like a whole bunch of crazy characters in it. So it has like Iron Fist, Dazzler, Black Panther, Misty Knight. And what's this
Doctor
guy called?
Voodoo.
Dr. Voodoo.
And they're all basically being captured by these anthropomorphic animal men. And they're now being forced to battle the animal men. And we see Misty Knight and Iron Fist taken out in this. There's one more issue of this great series left. And the cover is fantastic.
It's so brilliant.
Cage gets knocked out of his own comic on the cover of the next issue. This is going to be just one of those like super recommended runs if you know anyone that likes humor comics and just great cartooning.
Different as well, and such an amazing color palette. I don't know who so the colorist is, Scott Wills, and it's so I'm so bad at describing this because there's nothing else like it. It's like this amazing, crazy, trippy Technicolor dream. I love it.
It's great.
It's so brilliant.
Cage, great book. All right. Did you have any other comics that Marvel put out that you really liked this week?
I did really enjoy this week's issue of Black Panther: World of Wakanda.
Haven't read it yet, but I will.
So this is written by Roxane Gay, consulted by Ta-Nehisi Coates, pencils by Aletha E. Martinez, and this is about the two characters from the Dora. What the hell are they called?
Dora
Milaje. Who are the sort of secret, well, not secret, but they were like the wives of the Black Panther slash his like private army slash protectors. And this is about them, two of the members, Ao and the other one, Anika. Anika and Ao, who fall in love and realize that Black Panther is no longer doing what they consider to be in the best interests of Wakanda. And so they leave him to be on their own path. And this is one of the most like charming, wonderful romances in comics that I've read in a long time. I'm so attached to these characters now. It's really genuinely beautiful. It's great to see a different perspective of Black Panther You know, like, this is set a couple of years ago, but it's a perspective that we haven't seen in the Black Panther comics, and it's really enjoyable. I really like this. I think if you like the Black Panther series, this is a really welcome addition to what's going on.
Definitely.
Very good.
I look forward to reading it. Punisher number 7.
Yep.
This is the last comic that Steve Dillon ever worked on.
No way.
And he was able to finish half of this issue before he passed away, sadly, earlier in the year. I think, you know, it's a great continuation of what has been a surprisingly good run from Becky Cloonan, who I've not, you know, she hasn't really, I've not really read that many things that she's written before this, and I really, really like her take on Frank Castle and this fucked up world that he's inside of.
Yeah, it's a very silent, angry Frank Castle, which I quite enjoy.
It's my favorite kind of Frank Castle.
And it also makes it a quick read.
But this is like a great fight scene. The Punisher holding his own against two superpowered. There's like a drug you can take that makes you, gives you superpower, like it gives you super strength and almost invulnerability.
It's basically Venom.
And he takes on two people like that. There's this horrible threat, the face-off guy. What's his name? Face?
Yeah, isn't he just called Face?
Yeah.
The guy who takes people's faces off.
Now we see this issue ends with Frank Castle stumbling into a disgusting old lady's house with a shotgun. There's a lovely little note at the end of this issue that I think that this is probably the last page that Steve Dillon turned in. And he was sick when he turned it in, and the editor, Jake T., basically said, you know, how's it going? And he's going, I reckon I'll feel better now that I don't have to look at this woman's face anymore. So that was pretty sweet. And he also, Jake, the editor, goes on to talk about trying to pick the right image to remember Steve Dillon by. And they went with something from the Punisher Max run that he and Garth Ennis did. But he really wanted to go with one of the Welcome Back Frank panels, which is Frank Castle punching a polar bear.
I mean, how else do you honor someone's legacy?
Which is it was actually the cover image on the Serious Issues comic book group, which you can join. Facebook.com/group/Serious Issues Podcast. Come and join us there. We can talk about Frank Castle punching polar bears and any animal of your choosing.
He punches a lot of things, guys.
I really enjoyed Dr. Aphra number 2, maybe not as much as number 1, but it's written by Kieran Gillen and art by Kev Walker.
The great Kev Walker.
The great Kev Walker. This is the first Marvel Star Wars book featuring a character who was made up in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
This is there's very little kind of tying you to the main Star Wars world in this comic, which is, I think, way more fun.
Absolutely.
The stakes are higher, and you can kind of do a lot more. Dr. Aphra was introduced in the Darth Vader run, and her doctorate has been reprimanded due to the actions of her father, who is basically conning her into helping him find an old order of they weren't quite Jedi, they weren't quite Sith. They're basically like an order of people who maybe achieved immortality.
Mm.
And so he's been basically wasted his entire life trying to find them, and now he has the coordinates to basically locate them, and he's got to get his daughter and her droids and evil Wookiee to help him.
This is heaps of fun.
It's super fun.
Like, it sounds like such a silly concept because it's like basically an evil Han Solo with an evil Chewie and evil R2-D2 and C-3PO, but it's like, it's so fun, and just because of that,
yeah,
almost.
The shit works.
Absolutely.
I'm sure Steel Saunders would think otherwise.
Yeah, I feel like Star Wars fans will probably not enjoy this.
But I really, as a comic fan, I do enjoy this quite a lot.
Heaps enjoyable.
The Avengers 2.1, which is the Mark Waid and Barry Kitson series, which is kind of like a retelling of the early days of the Avengers when Iron Man and Thor and Hulk kind of took time off after the first few issues of the Avengers, and there was a fill-in team of Captain America, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, and Quicksilver. They had to take over. This issue is really, really fun. It is narrated by Quicksilver, and I baffled that you don't read this, Siobhan, because it actually is super up your alley.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't like it. I just thought it was super average, and I have enough super average team books on my pull list at the moment. Thank you very much.
This is my favorite Marvel book that Mark Waid is writing on, obviously besides Black Widow, which I just found out is only going to be a 12 issue run, which is a big bummer.
It's a travesty, guys.
This is a really, really fun comic if you love those early Avengers comics, and it feels completely different to any of the Avengers books that Marvel's are putting out now anyway. So, yeah, I thought this is fun.
Okay.
Fuck you, Siobhan.
Speaking of other Avengers books, Ultimates Squared. Ultimates 2. I don't know what that's supposed to be.
By Al Ewing and art by Trevor Foreman.
I like Trevor Foreman.
I'm torn. I love his facial work and I love his character stuff, but I find his backgrounds... And I read this and then immediately I read the Thanos comic, which is art by Mike Diodato. And neither of them are very good at drawing interesting backgrounds. It's just like lines and like big empty spaces.
Are hard.
I don't know. They're kind of fucking necessary. There's a lot of blank space in this book.
It's true. There is.
But I do like his facial work. I hated all the weird like 3D art that kind of looks like it was done in the 90s using like the world's biggest computer. anyway, you tell me some things you liked about this.
It's just kind of fun, right? This is like, this is Galactus the Lifebringer, and he's been brought into the I don't really know much about cosmic space.
He's been brought
Marvel
in the,
stuff.
Basically, like, because Galactus has, is no longer the devourer of worlds, he is now the Lifebringer. There is the Living Tribunal. Gets called up, like, in the cosmos. They need to bring order back to the cosmos. All the cosmic entities are worried that this is too big of a change and they need to restore order. So either they force him to be the devourer of worlds again or they assign someone new. Meanwhile, the Ultimates team, this is like a real deep cut, like kind of dealing with a character that appeared in Dan Slott's Silver Surfer run during the Secret Wars event.
Which I didn't read, but I still, like, you could still understand
it
basically
was
what was
going on.
It was
just a cosmic thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is just a very big setup-y episode.
Yeah.
Issue, sorry.
I think I really like this team. I really like Miss America and Blue Marvel and Black Panther and Monica Rambeau. I think that's like a really solid, fun team.
And
I think
Al Ewing writes a good Captain Marvel too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is probably the most compelling and interesting that Carol comes across in any comic at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
I also read Occupy Avengers. Did you read this?
I forgot to read this one. I saw that at the store today. I was like, oh, I didn't pick this one up. Damn it.
Yeah, this was actually like, this is pretty fun. It's kind of already wrapped up the first little story, which was all about Hawkeye. He's just traveling the land, trying to redeem himself after shooting Bruce Banner through the eye. And he goes onto a reservation, a Native American reservation, where the water is being stolen by a bunch of jerks. This is just like, this is good. This is just good fun. This is written by David Walker, so the characters are like believable and compelling, and everyone actually has a different voice.
Mm-hmm.
The art by Carlos Pacheco is really nice. I like that it was kind of just a little two-issue story and then done, but now we're going to see Red Wolf and Hawkeye continuing on a sort of road trippy adventure together.
And there's rumor that Nighthawk is going to join them quite soon.
I mean, that's a fun team-up.
Definitely.
Yeah, and there's a coming this year in Occupy Avengers.
Oh, there's Nighthawk.
Page.
There he is.
There's Nighthawk, there's someone in a wheelchair, I don't know who that is.
Professor Xavier?
The classic Nick Fury and Captain America threatening to kill Hawkeye. I love stuff like that. So heaps fun. Heaps good. Really
Sweet.
Enjoyed that.
Awesome. Thanos number 2 by Jeff Lemire and Mike Diodato. I don't care about this book, and it's too many big, dumb cosmic ideas and characters, and apparently Thanos is dying, but also people are going to try and kill him. At the end of this... we see, what's it called? What's Gladiators? The Shi'ar Imperial Guard show up.
Yep.
I don't know. It was just, it's like there's just so many characters and none of them are being explored very well.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this does rely on you knowing who Star Fox and who's the other guy? Who's like the chunky gladiator guy? I don't know who he is. But anyway, relying on knowing who these people are, which I clearly don't.
Tyrus or something.
Mike Diodato draws a fucking killer Thanos. I really like his Thanos.
Yeah, again, and this great character work, but just shit background.
This is an evil Thanos as well, who shows up to kill his father.
Yeah,
really good.
But I've seen comics in which he kills his mother. He kills every one of his children.
Look, he killed everyone one time.
he
loves death.
he straight up loves death.
I think, in a very literal sense. I think that the best Thanos story of all time will always be the Infinity Gauntlet. I think that's a pretty perfect superhero book and superhero event. And he's so genuinely scary in that, in a way I was not expecting.
But I like Thanos talking to a skeleton.
Though.
I want to see him talk to a skeleton.
I want to see him trying to bone a skeleton again.
I'm trying to see him bone some bones.
but this is... I didn't hate this. You know what I mean? And I like who's that chick? Whose name I forget? Who's the Shi'ar?
Something Smasher? Like like Something Smasher.
Isn't she just Smasher?
Something like that, yeah.
I was going to say Adam Smasher, but that's a JSA.
But she was in Hickman's Avengers run. Actually, a lot of characters and ideas we're seeing in here were all part of Hickman's Avengers run.
Yeah.
So I like that part of it. And I'm definitely going to read issue 3 because Gladiator's in it.
And
I
at love least, Gladiator. Yeah, Gladiator is great. And at the very least, this is at least like a new Thanos story. We haven't seen Thanos dealing with like an internal cancer before. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, cool. All right. Do you think Thanos is going to die at the end of the series?
Yes, but probably not for long.
What if this series brought back War Machine? That'd be unexpected and cool.
It would be. That would be heaps unexpected. Who would believe that?
Did you read Venom number 2?
I did.
This is fucking weird comic.
This is a weird...
I think, honestly, I don't mind where the story's going.
I generally
like the art overall, but I just, you know what? I hate this book. I hate his hair.
Yeah, his hair is so stupid.
His hair is like this weird anime...
It's kind 90s. Of like Phoenix Wright, but not as good.
Yeah, it's, you know what I mean? Yeah, and it seems so fickle to like, you know, be genuine, generally okay with a book, but just sledge it because he has the worst hair ever. But he has the dumbest hair.
But it's
in
such
comics
a like, it really is a funny like. It feels like a very funny 90s throwback style, which kind of makes me like it more.
Sure.
I think my problem is I just don't like. This is kind of interesting because this is. Like Venom previously was in the body of Flash Thompson. That's his name, right?
So he was good.
So he was good. So this is a good
Venom.
Wants
to be good. Yeah.
This is a good Venom in the body of an evil dude, which is kind of an interesting, like, interesting thing that we haven't seen before. So I sort of, I think because Venom is such a, like 90s extreme bro character that I kind of get a little bit automatically eye rolly, but I actually enjoyed this more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
Even like I was reading the whole thing being like, oh, I hate this. And now I'm going back through it. I'm like, you know what? I actually kind of enjoyed this. It's pretty clever. And the art's pretty dynamic. And there are some funny little moments.
If someone wants to, like, for like issue 3, if they could get it before I read it and then Photoshop an afro onto the main character instead of his regular hair, I'd appreciate that.
That'd be amazing.
I might really enjoy this book. Finally, I read Squadron Supreme. I have not read one issue of this before, but I've
Why did you pick it up?
Well, I've been
reading. You know what? I almost picked that up as well because of Namor on the cover.
Namor's on the cover. And the first issue of this, apparently he gets decapitated.
Oh, wow.
So he's been brought back to life in this issue. Awesome. But I've been reading all of the original Supreme Power and Squadron Supreme stuff that J. Michael Straczynski did in the 90s over at Marvel. And it's really, really fun, captivating series. And now I understand why Hyperion and Nighthawk and all the characters from that, Doctor whatever the fuck, that's his name. I now understand why they're compelling and why they exist to begin with.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I want to know what they're like now. And this is an okay book, I guess. I might go back and read it all on like Marvel Unlimited or something.
Interesting.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. I read a couple more Marvel comics. I read Invincible Iron Man issue 2 by Brian Michael Bendis, everyone's favorite, with art by Stefano Caselli. So this is the Riri Williams Ironheart book.
And we did not like issue 1.
I didn't like issue 1, mostly because I would love for this character to be able to develop without a stupid artificial intelligence version of Tony being a jerk this whole time. And I think that this kind of is a comic that plays to Bendis' strengths because it's not super plot driven. It's just kind of draining stuff, which works, and more origin story stuff. So in the last issue, we saw that Riri Williams, her new stepfather and her best friend were shot in a drive-by shooting in maybe not the most intelligent, sensitive
That's the
choice.
Origin story for every black person in the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, exactly. Like this
That's
is
just
not-
what happens. It's a rite of passage. I'm lying. It's a terrible thing. I hated it. I thought it was terrible.
The thing that I liked about this, which actually surprised me, is the training session with Tony Stark, because he gets all of his Iron Man suits to attack Riri at once to put her through her paces. And it seems like she's really struggling and not doing a good job, and then she sort of outsmarts him in a really cool, clever way. And I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, actually, watching you flick through these things and seeing this battle of all the suits actually looks really fun.
And the art's really nice. Who is it again? Stefano Caselli is very, very good. And it's very reminiscent, I think, of Bendis' best stuff. Like, it has a bit of an Ultimate Spider-Man vibe.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Which is a big compliment.
I think Caselli actually did some Ultimate Spider-Man
stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Bendis always gets paired with good always gets paired with good artists.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except for that weird run on Ultimate Spider-Man just before Peter died where it was weird anime. I didn't like that.
I love that.
Did you?
I don't know. I didn't really read it. But you said it and I went, ooh.
sounds good. Sign me up.
So of all the Bendis books that I'm reading...
which is all of them.
Which is all of them for some fucking reason. This is the best one, for sure. I also read Sam Wilson, Captain America by Nick Spencer.
With the fantastic Misty Knight cover.
Yes, with art by Angel Unzueta.
Didn't nail it.
And Simon Kudransky.
Maybe nailed it a little more than the other one.
So this is kind of Misty forcing Sam to just take a weekend off and go on a road trip with his brother and have a bit of chill time because it's been really extreme lately. And she's Misty Knight. She can handle whatever Captain America bullshit you can throw at her. So you get a little bit of cool Misty Knight history. And then...
So this is what crazy. So this is what happens while he's gone to the wrestling
No. This is like he goes on a road trip with his brother and okay, they right. go and try like... artisanal foods.
Okay, really?
Yeah,
definitely going to read this.
And this is all about Lady Stiltman, a criminal I've never heard of who just has really, really long legs. And it's also like, I mean, it wouldn't be a Nick Spencer story if it didn't have something to do with like hacking or the internet or something like that. So this is all about various superheroines having sex tapes leaked, except that they're not actually the superheroines / villains. They're life model decoys.
Oh, wow.
And there's, like, this gross, fat sort of troll dude who is producing them and selling them to the highest bidder. And so Misty Knight goes in and interrupts his plans, feeds him to the sharks, goes and attacks a bunch of dudes for buying gross sex tapes of people who didn't want them to buy them. It's, like, it's another pretty fun one-and-done issue, and yep. I enjoyed it. Ends in makeouts. Pretty good.
Yep. Oh, I read this.
Oh, did you? Okay, so, cool. We can talk about this. I read... issue 22 of The Amazing Spider-Man, written by Dan Slott, with and art by Christos Gage and... the oh, no, wait, hang on.
They wrote it Sorry. Together.
Dan Slott and Christos Gage wrote it. Giuseppe Comencoli is the artist. My bad.
So the Clone Conspiracy event book I have not been enjoying, but I've actually been kind of enjoying these Spider-Man issues that kind of tell you more about the big moments in the Clone Conspiracy stories. And this is all about Ben Reilly, what he's been doing...
Yeah.
Since the Clone Saga.
How he came back, how he came to be, and why he thinks that reanimating Uncle Ben is a good idea. It's not a good idea, guys. I still maintain that it's not a good idea.
Well, I mean, everyone knows that's been reading the Clone Conspiracy that it's not a good idea because everyone turns to zombies.
Everyone turns to zombies. Oh, I didn't read the last issue, so I didn't know that. But so this gives you a little bit of, like, I'm not super familiar. I haven't read the original Clone stuff, so this gives you a fairly succinct history of Ben Reilly and then what happens to him. So the original Jackal clones him and then continues killing him and cloning him in different ways to make his body perfect because the bodies keep deteriorating. And then Ben Reilly finally breaks free, discovers a way to stop his body deteriorating with those weird little pills that he makes everyone stay on, and then starts cloning the original Jackal and clones a million of him to use as his slaves. And it's pretty, like, simultaneously fucked up, but you also sympathize with Ben and you get what's going on. And in the end, even Peter sort of is sympathizing with him and, like, is like, okay, well, tell me what your plan is for bringing Uncle Ben back.
Yep.
But it is, like, like they are standing over Uncle Ben's... exhumed coffin the whole time in a slightly heavy way. But it's clever. Like, Dan Slott knows Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah,
and
totally.
I feel like it's one of those ones that I will drop off Spider-Man for a while and then jump back on and be so shocked by how good it is and how compelling he still manages to make it after so long. Very clever.
Definitely. Cool. Those are our Marvel and DC reviews. Now let's review some good comics.
Yeah.
Black Hammer, number 6.
Woo!
By Jeff Lemire, Dean Ormston, and Dave Stewart. We've loved every issue of this series, and this may have been maybe my favorite. I don't know.
Yeah. I loved the, like, it starts with a very sort of classic EC horror sort of, come readers and let me tell you a tale of woe.
Yeah.
I loved.
The last few issues have kind of explored each character in more depth. We learn more about their backstory and their current troubles that they're facing trapped in this weird dimension.
And everyone's kind of like a golden age superhero, or not even golden, just a golden age comic trope.
Yeah, exactly. And this one we learn the horror element of the team, which is Madame Dragonfly, who was not actually an original member of the Golden Age heroes. She basically just came to help this one time and then got transported to this weird town that they can't escape after that one battle.
And she has a very horrifying origin story, which is very, very good.
Yeah, yeah. Super, super actually, you know, proper grim beginning. And also, maybe she might be one of the reasons that they can't leave this weird dimension.
And she does something pretty on the side of evil at the end, which is very shocking and cool and clever. And I love this book, man.
It's such a good book. It's so good. Is like, you know, we say this about a lot of books, but this is, we put it in one of, in our best comics of 2016.
When it only had like two issues out.
This is a must read.
It really is. And Dean Ormston is such a good artist.
Definitely.
Like there's a sort of, it does feel very in sync with like Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. Like it makes sense that this is where that comic lives.
Yep.
And it's just, it's super brilliant.
Dark Horse, we've got some good comics out at the moment.
Yeah,
we're reviewing most of them right now. But I'm very, very, very looking forward to the Black Hammer giant-sized annual coming out next month featuring, the cover is by Jeff Lemire, who writes this book. And as much as I love Dean Ormston, it's so good to see his versions of the characters.
Absolutely. And it's got a big hammer in the middle. So imagine if there was like, I hope there's like a Thor analog. That'd be fun.
No, there is.
Oh, who's the Thor?
The Black Hammer is the one hero that hasn't been transported to this dimension with.
Well, we have to assume he died,
and,
right?
This is his daughter. Yeah, shows up at the end here.
I got that.
But there's art by Lemire, Mike Allred, Dustin Nguyen, Emmy Lennox, Nate Powell, Matt Kent, and Ray Fawkes. That's such an incredible lineup. It's the epitome of artists who are definitely an acquired taste. If you don't like that sketchier style, this book is not for you at all. But that is like such a in tune, great list of obviously Mike Allred's not sketchy, but he still is quite an acquired pop art taste.
Absolutely, these are all artists with distinctive styles. I'm excited to see what Dustin Nguyen is doing.
Yeah, they're also frequent Lemire collaborators as well. Although I don't know if Allred and Lemire have ever collaborated before. It's exciting. I'm excited.
It is exciting.
Cool. Also coming out this week, featuring the aforementioned Matt Kent. He wrote a book called Ether with art by David Rubin. This is issue 2 of a story about a homeless man who can travel to another dimension, which is all wacky, and he's trying to solve the mystery of who killed, like, kind of like the protector of this dimension.
The superhero of this world who seemed impossible to defeat but was killed with a magic bullet, which are like little talking anthropomorphized bullets. Like, this is such a fun and
bizarre,
also heartbreaking comic.
There's so much going on in this book, and so it's one of these books where so little is explained.
I love that.
I know it's coming, so it's fine.
Totally. I love a book that isn't afraid to just drop you in the middle of something and assume that you're smart enough to figure it out. It doesn't hold your hand the whole way through.
And this gives us lots of backstory of like the gatekeeper character and the main character. We delve way back into his backstory over a couple pages, and
it's pretty tragic.
The mystery of this is just gets deeper and deeper.
And David Rubin's art is so phenomenal. I cannot express enough how much I love this. And Image are going to be reprinting a comic for the first time in English, I believe, that he did like a Beowulf series in hardcover, which I'm really keen to check out.
I'll definitely check that out too. Matt Kent also wrote Depth number 9 this week.
I miss like every second issue of this.
Yeah, I chose to read Ether over it this week just because I was pressed for time. But I assure you, Depth was probably pretty great this week.
It was also very good. Did you read Briggsland issue 5?
No, another great Dark Horse book written by Brian Wood with art by, he's such a good name. Mac Chater, is his
Mac
name?
Mac Chater, yeah, that's a good name. This is such a
great series?
Yeah, great series. Sorry, but like it makes me feel funny because you're kind of sympathizing with borderline neo-Nazis. Like, some of the characters are explicitly Nazis, but we're just not sure which kind of side of things Grace Briggs, who is the matriarch of this family, sits on. And this is a really, like, this sees her in a much darker light. We've seen her being kind of the lighter side of the family, but in this she is taking a firm stance with someone who is not wanting to sell a property to them, and she encourages her son, who is a full neo-Nazi, to do some pretty horrible stuff to him. And by the end, you're not really sure where it's going, but she is collaborating with police. It's a very, very good, complicated comic. It makes me like it makes so much sense that this has been picked up to be a TV series.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what that's going to be like.
It makes me feel like Breaking Bad, like in the sense that the characters are so complicated and by turns likable and unlikable.
Definitely. I will read that ASAP.
Yeah.
I read one Image book this week, and that was the finale of Lake of Fire by Nathan Fairbairn and Matt Smith. This was the the Crusades-based alien comic in which we see a bunch of knights go to a seemingly low-threat kind of village to deal with a problem, but the problem turns out to be an alien invasion. And this is the action-packed finale where we see certain knights go down in a literal blaze of glory. A lot of characters die in this. But it looks thrilling the entire way through. The colors,
so beautiful,
are fantastic. And I thought, you know, this book kind of definitely went to a place that I wasn't expecting it to.
Mm.
And I think if I reread it again, I'll really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a satisfying read in trade.
It's another one that I think would be a fantastic fucking movie.
Yeah.
Because it's there's some great, great action scenes in this series. And
I don't think you could do it justice in a movie.
Yeah, I know. The finale's devastating.
Yeah.
I just put that out there. So be warned. Really, really great series. When the trade comes out, I can't recommend this enough.
Absolutely.
And I hope Nathan Fairbairn does a lot more writing in the future.
Mm.
He's a great colorist, and his name shows up in a lot of great projects. But
he's clearly a super talented writer super as well.
Yep. Awesome. Loved it. Let's talk about Animosity.
Let's.
Talking about series that did not go where we thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
This is a book by Marguerite Bennett and Raphael de la Tour about probably my favorite number one issue.
Yes, such a brilliantly structured number one.
Of animals gaining sentience and being aware of what everything that's happened to them and being able to communicate with humans and understand their place in the world. This jumped forward past everything remotely interesting and we just get flung into this way too crazy world where the animals have taken over.
And there's lots of different like warring factions of animals and you can't, I don't really understand what they're all doing yet. Like it's a bit confusing. And I feel like my key criticism of Marguerite Bennett is always like, there's just too many pop culture references in a way that I find really jarring and takes me out of it. And I don't personally enjoy.
I liked that weird Pokemon one a couple of issues ago.
That was pretty funny.
I did not like the one in this. I can never remember what it was. But
yeah,
me neither. I remember seeing it and being like, ugh, I don't know about this.
I'm still kind of interested because she set up a couple of ideas. Like, we assumed that Jesse, the main character's parents are dead, but now Sandor, the dog, might have
killed them?
Yeah, well, he might have, or they might still be alive and he's hiding Jesse from them. So it's sort of, that's pretty interesting. But yeah, I don't find this super compelling.
Yeah.
Not as compelling, like that first issue was so brilliant. And it just hasn't lived up to that.
It's changing artists with the next issue too. So either that means hopefully like a backstory or one-shot issue, which is what this series desperately needs, more meat to it as opposed to just jumping forward events. Because this conflict that gets resolved in this issue itself could have been drawn out longer.
Absolutely.
It just moves way too quickly. That's my biggest problem with it. Yeah.
Maybe she's just worried about not... Maybe she only has six issues or something, but...
That's a real... Yeah. This is such an interesting concept that I wish was explored in bigger depth.
Agreed.
I read The Electric Sublime.
I can't believe I missed this.
Yeah, this is my favorite book right now.
It's so good.
W. Maxwell Prince. He's going to be possibly my one to watch next year as a writer. Actually, so too with the artist on this book, Martin Morazzo, is an excellent, excellent artist as
really
well.
Really excellent.
But I read W. Maxwell Prince's One Week in the Library. It's a graphic novel that Image put out a couple weeks ago. It's fantastic. I'll talk about it more in depth. I'll bring it in next week and we can talk about it.
Yeah, cool.
Because we clearly don't already have 60 comics to get through. But I'll review it properly in depth in the future. It's really, really great. And the writing in it's fantastic. He's just a very good writer. He can do great character. He can do incredible lore and backstory. And, you know, he pulls on some pretty big ideas, even in this series, The Electric Sublime, which is all about crimes in art. And in this issue, without spoiling too much of it, there is a death in this issue.
Oh, my God.
But the death isn't of a character that in the story. The death is of the guy in the fucking Scream artwork.
No way.
His head gets crushed. So, yeah, we've seen, the Mona Lisa. The Mona Lisa.
That's graphic.
Who did the Scream?
Edvard Munch.
Yeah,
probably pronounced that really poorly.
But the Scream, like, so
yeah, you guys all know that one.
The Scream, the guy with his face going, ah!
The scared guy.
You know, Home Alone based it on it.
Yeah. I think it was based on Home Alone.
That's right. But yeah, like it ends with the main bad guy crushing the Scream's face.
Like, man, this is a clever book.
It's really, really clever. It's a murder mystery in the art world.
And so much less pretentious than that sounds. It's genuinely just a really solid detective murder mystery, but like with a surreal edge.
It's a classic Vertigo book.
Yeah, that's exactly what
it feels like. It feels like, you know, The Invisibles, Why the Last Man.
Yep.
The Unwritten.
Doesn't feel like Why the Last Man.
Doesn't feel like, but in like
more like The Unwritten.
On the Unwritten, yeah, sure. The ones that really pull on literary
absolutely
sources. Yeah, yeah. I really, really like this series.
Heaps and, fun.
Again, and I like it as much as I like Black Hammer.
And the art's so really brilliant.
This will be on my, I reckon, favorite comics of next year list for sure.
For sure.
And if there were one or two more issues that came out this year, it would have made 2016's.
I'm mad at myself because instead of that, I read Buffy the Vampire Slayer issue 2.
You could have reviewed this in the Dark Horse section too.
Oh yeah, I'm a dummy.
Isn't that wild? We read way more Dark Horse comics than Image this week.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It was a really quiet week for Image, but they made up for it this week. so this is currently being written by Christos Gage and with art by Rebecca Isaacs. And I think the reason that I keep reading this is because I think this is the best art that Buffy has ever had. Isaacs is extremely good. Like, I was like, oh, I don't want to read this. And then I sort of flicked through and I was like, actually, I really want to stare at these pictures for a little while. This is a weird story that, like, considering how Buffy does not have a very diverse cast. Like, there's a lot of LGBT characters, but everyone's white. Everyone is white. Mm-hmm. And this is a story about, like, they're making internment camps for magic users because the rest of the world is now conscious of the fact that there's magic. And in the last issue, first issue of this series, San Francisco gets attacked by a big dragon. And so they're sort of dealing with the aftermath of that. They're not allowed back in their homes yet. And then the government announces that all magic users will be sent into internment camps. And it ends with, like, Buffy and Spike looking at each other being like, oh my God, America's like bringing internment camps back. And it just strikes me as like a little bit weird and maybe a little bit tone deaf to have that kind of story being played out with exclusively white characters at this time, at this point in history. So it made me feel a little bit like weird about it. But other than that, it's a pretty good story. And Rebecca Isaacs really is good. She does a very good job at sort of balancing getting the likenesses right, getting the clothes really right. Like, this is a good series for, like, women not just wearing, like, a shirt and pants and heels. it's, like, she does a good job of that. So that's the key reason to read this book.
Maybe there's just the only white people in Sunnydale. It sounds like a made-up white person place. Like, it sounds like a shopping mall.
Yeah, that's, like, it pretty much is. And, like, I mean, it was, I don't know. It was the 90s. Joss Whedon didn't care about that at that time in his life, I guess.
No one did. I did not read Archie. I did not read Slam.
Oh, okay. I did read Archie because I thought you did. Archie, this is a continuation of the Archie has to plan his parents' anniversary, but also he's sad, and so he's turned into Jughead slash Veronica fighting Cheryl Blossom story arc. I think I enjoyed this issue much more than the last one. I still don't especially like Joe Eisma's art, and I think we miss a lot of, like, sight gags because he's just not as skilled as some of the other artists that we've seen work on this. But this was a solid issue for Mark Waid.
I think he's a skilled artist. I don't think he's a right match for the Archie books.
Yeah, that's more accurate. Yeah, this was good fun, you know, some sweet moments for Archie. We see that Veronica is coming back to Riverdale, but so is Cheryl. Oh, no.
Cheryl Blossom.
So Veronica won the battle, but she has potentially lost the war. Yeah, like, this wasn't the best issue of Archie, but it was fine. And Slam, which is the roller derby-focused series written by Pamela Ribbon, illustrated by Veronica Fish, who I love. This one, it's kind of interesting because it doesn't feel like a traditional linear plot-driven comic. Like, I find myself a little bit confused by all the characters and what's going on, but it sort of shows, like, the different, the two main characters having different experiences in Derby. So one of them is really working hard and excelling, but, like, the rest of her life is kind of falling by the wayside. And the other one is just not she's not excelling in the way that she wanted to. And so she's really struggling with that while also trying to find time for a new relationship. So it's like, it's clever, it's sweet. Veronica Fisher is an extremely good artist. I still find myself a little bit like, I don't understand what's going on, but I enjoyed it.
How are the portrayals of the female characters?
Good.
To you?
Good. Yeah. Good to me. Genuinely good to me. I have, there is a good array of different kinds of female characters. They are likable, which is not like, you don't have to be likable, but these characters happen to be quite likable, and they sort of have complex lives. You know, they're not just like, I'm this thing. They have they are multifaceted characters.
I'm this thing, but overweight.
Yes.
I hate that, like I totally get that that's like, you know, it's important to have diverse. As an overweight person, I love seeing myself reflected in books. But I hate that that's like a character archetype.
Yeah.
And the fat one.
Like, the chubby chick, right?
The proud fat one.
Yeah. Like. The one who's not ashamed of herself. That's crazy, right?
Yeah,
comics.
Yeah, I know.
No, this is good. This is good. Good female representation. A fun story. If you liked Whip It, definitely check this out.
Cool. So there's all our reviews this week. If you would like to argue with us about the comics that we did or didn't review this week, please come and do so. Facebook.com/Serious Issues Podcast is our Facebook page. Or we have a little group going, which is Facebook.com/group/Serious Issues Podcast, featuring a few hundred people just talking comics all goddamn day. And if you want to get even more in depth, there's a group chat. A Serious Issues group chat going, which is just like, I don't know, a handful of people just like nonstop. I'm talking like every minute I get a notification that someone, like just a never-ending discussion of comics. So if you're someone that, you know, loves this podcast because it's finally, it's like having a conversation with someone that reads as many comics or more comics than you, definitely get over to our group and join the conversation there. It's a diverse bunch of people who just are united by their love of comics.
It's nice. It's a nice place to be.
You can also follow us on Twitter, which is twitter.com/serious_issues. And individually at LevDog, LevDawg, is where you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. And Siobhan is Siobhan CBG.
Yeah.
Cool. You know what would be really nice? A nice little end of year Christmas present for us. Go to iTunes and leave us a nice review if you're a fan of the show. It's the easiest way to get more listeners. And with more listeners means we can do more fun opportunities, more live episodes, and more bonus stuff for you to listen to. So head on over to iTunes and leave us a nice little review. Should you feel so inclined, we would appreciate it very much. We'll see you next week for another episode of Serious Issues. And one more time for 2016, Siobhan. Your famous catchphrase, time you'll ever have to say
it. I came up with it. stay serious, friends.
And remember, write to us, what should Siobhan's catchphrase be in 2017? She loves those catchphrases.
I just love it.
Let us know. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.